You're listening to the Electric Sheep podcast. In this episode, to coincide with the Bird's Eye View Film Festival's focus on women in horror, Electric Sheep magazine editor Virginie Selavy leads a discussion with three women filmmakers working in this traditionally male-dominated genre. Her guests are Melanie Light, director of Switch, Kate Shenton, director of Bon Appetit, and Jennifer Ease, co-director of Short Lease. This podcast was previously broadcast as a Clear Spot on Tuesday, the 8th of March 2011, on Resonance 104.4 FM.
Welcome to Bloody Women, a Bird's Eye View special in which we're going to discuss women and horror film. That was Betty and the Werewolves with a track called Euston Station out on Damaged Goods, chosen for their name. I'm Virginie Selavy, editor of Electric Sheep, an online magazine that focuses on transgressive cinema and can be found at www.electricsheepmagazine.com. For those of you who may not know, Bird's Eye View is a film festival that celebrates the work of women filmmakers, and it opens tonight and runs until the 17th of March. They have a strand called Bloody Women, From Gothic to Horror, and which obviously focuses on women in horror. They will have a panel discussion, they will have new live scores by female musicians to silent films, and features such as Catherine Bigelow's Near Dark, and also a horror shorts programme. And with me today, I have three of the filmmakers whose work is showing as part of the horror shorts programme. Melanie Light, who directed Switch, Kate Shenton, who directed Bon Appetit, and Jennifer Ease, who directed Short Lease. So we're going to discuss their films to start with. If we start with Kate, do you want to tell us a little bit about your film?
Yeah, my film is called Bon Appetit, and basically it's actually three short 1 minute films about food, breakfast, lunch and dinner, and it's sort of providing very unappetizing twists to everyday eating. It's a fun one, like it is like a horror comedy, it's meant to be very fun, but the main aim of the film is sort of to cause a reaction, like it is sort of like whether you laugh or you feel like you want to throw up, which has been some people's responses to the film, which is lovely and wonderful and makes me very happy, as long as it actually caused some form of reaction. That has been the main aim. But yeah, so polite middle class cannibalism and poo eating and lots of fun. So that's my film.
Yes, it was very funny and very disgusting too.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. And what was interesting is that we've got a feature at the moment on the website called Warped Women, which is about Darklight, which is this initiative by Warp Films to help women make horror films. And as part of this feature, what was discussed was that women were not so much into gore. You are kind of like the opposite of that.
Yeah, I love my blood and my gore and my homemade special effects. And my fake blood is the pride of my life, is my fake blood recipe, which I like to use in gallons and gallons. So no, I would completely agree. I love blood.
Yes.
Like, for me, that's sort of the essence of what horror is. It's not so much about being scared, it's more a celebration of violence.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah.
I challenge your fake blood to my fake
blood.
Oh,
really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, there was definitely a gore aspect in your film as well. Do you want to tell us a little bit about it? That's Melanie, who did Switch.
Yeah, my film was basically sort of just very short, 4.5 minutes long, kind of a bit of a play on the sort of like gender that kind of goes on in your usual horror film. It's just a guy sort of like driving home, comes across a woman, goes to sort of go and get her, and then doesn't quite work out to plan, basically. So, yeah.
I liked the reversal of roles in this.
Yeah, well, I kind of, you know, I work on other people's horror films all the time, and I watch horror films and stuff, and I was just like, it's from a story that I wrote when I was at university quite a long time ago, and I said, I'm going to make this one day. And then I just went out and, you know, I wasn't working at the time, just went out and made it. And it was, yeah, I don't know how intentionally it is and it isn't, if you know what I mean. And I just thought, well, I kind of got annoyed with seeing, you know, the guys having all the fun, and I think it's about time that the girls had a bit of fun and started killing some blokes.
Yes, why not? And I really like the snowy landscape in your film, but you've explained to us that this actually was an accident.
That was a kind of beautiful accident. Obviously, I didn't have the budget to afford a snow machine, but it was supposed to be, you know, I didn't know it was actually going to snow. It was like before Christmas, there was suddenly like a major snowstorm. The whole of England got shut down, as it was. Like, we were skidding our cars up to the location, and people's cars were abandoned as we got up there, but we were still determined to shoot it. And we only had the time frame of about 9:30 till 3 o'clock, and we'd shot stuff the day before, and we could only use one shot from that day, and we had to basically shoot the whole entire film just in that one day, in those few hours. And we managed to somehow pull it off with our very small crew, and I think we just made it, you know, everyone was so into doing it because we had so much fun. So it's freezing cold though.
It's really interesting because I was convinced that that was deliberate, because I really love this whole subgenre of horror films set in wintry landscapes or in the snow, and so I thought you were really going for that.
No, I didn't know it was going to snow. It saved it. It looks great though. It looks so beautiful, like just landscapes with snow and stuff like that. And then when you put that blood in that snow,
oh yeah,
as well,
there's nothing better than blood in the snow,
you know,
is there?
We actually, because it snowed again, we kept hold of our camera gear and we had blood and stuff, and we did a pickup day, and then we went out in the garden, just threw snow, like blood all over the snow, so we had our credit roll for that as well. So we kind of did that and just went to town.
Okay, and Jennifer, do you want to tell us a bit about Short Lease?
Well, I'm feeling a bit left out because I didn't have any blood in my film specifically. So I didn't get to, you know, throw things around the walls and hack people up. But basically, when I wrote it, I just wanted to write a ghost story, because I love M.R. James and Vernon Lee and Edith Wharton and people like that, and I grew up reading those things. So I sat down and I said, I want to write a ghost story, and I decided to write it in short film format because fewer words on the page. So it came out, it ended up being a very sort of traditional light and sound haunted house story where you don't really see much. Everything kind of happens off screen.
Okay. You create a very, very a supernatural atmosphere through the sounds and visuals, and that's the most important thing, I think, about what's scary in your film.
Yeah, definitely. Basically, what I wanted to do was bring the audience into the atmosphere through the main character, Marisha Kay. It was more kind of about creating a feeling so that the audience could put themselves into the film and just sort of feel what the character was feeling and feel the sort of creepiness of the atmosphere and, you know, the sort of supernatural terror that's sort of off screen and that kind of thing. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really kind of, it was very much very light, very sound, very atmospheric. Mm-hmm. You know, something like, you know, The Haunting, from 1963.
Yeah.
Or the old sort of Val Lewton, Jacques Tourneur films.
Yeah. You know. The sort of the house is alive and yeah. you will not escape kind
yeah.
of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I really liked the circular structure of it. It really added to the oppressive feeling in the film. Where did that come from?
That was also an interesting thing. It was more of a practical consideration. These days, it's so hard to get a proper atmosphere in a ghost story because we're so connected to people all the time with our cell phones and our computers and everything else. I mean, you find a body hanging in an abandoned house, the first thing you're going to do is call the cops. So I thought, okay, I wrote the beginning of it. She gets there, she sees the body, she calls the cops. How do I make the cops not show up? And that's where the loop came from, you know, how to isolate her. So it was a bit of a practical consideration.
Yeah.
But I think I hope it worked well.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. But it is a problem in horror movies now. You have to find this way of disconnecting people because...
Yeah. And I get annoyed. There's in so many horror films these days, in the very beginning, say in the first 10 minutes, you have, you know, five teenagers going off to a cabin and they always make a big deal of, you know, taking out their mobiles and going, oh, there's no signal. Hmm. You know.
No. Yeah.
It was actually The Hills Run Red worked with that really well. There were five teenagers going out to the woods, and they actually had this moment in the car going there where they take out their cell phones and say, oh, I have full bars. This is amazing. You know, I can make any call anywhere. Later on, they're running through the woods being terrified, and one of the kids takes their cell phone out, and they call 911, and the operator says, where are you? What's your location? And they look around and say, I don't know. So it was a good thing, you know, taking that little cliche.
Yeah, that's good. That's realistic as well.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Kate, your two films are very serious, but Kate, your film is a more comic take on the horror genre. Why did you choose to do a comedy?
Well, the thing is, it's sort of just, the whole idea just sort of happened. And I didn't even realise it was a horror film until people actually told me, Kate, you've just made a horror film. I was like, oh, that's sort of nice. I mean, I had that idea quite a long time ago. And as I developed it, it just kept working more and more in a comedy. And for me, like, I like to make films which are quite fun to watch, which are, you know, that you sort of, they're fun and... they are a comedy and they are entertaining, even if they are gross and a bit, you know, very violent and sort of trying to push how far I can get that on as little money as possible. I still want there to be that comedy element that, oh, I shouldn't laugh, but it is actually sort of quite funny that this guy's penis is in a bowl. That's hilarious. Like, so it's sort of trying to find a different way of finding humour in things that really you shouldn't find funny, but are actually quite funny if put and presented in a certain...
Yeah.
Like, so that sort of... And the thing is, like, I don't think I would ever make a horror film to actually be a scary, scary horror film. It is more... I quite enjoy actually taking the horror genre and almost stripping the horror element and just keeping the violence and the characters and that type of thing, but not actually having it scary. So it's sort of taking horror, but taking the horror element away. So that's sort of what I'm quite interested in. At the moment. So that's sort of why I ended up doing a comedy. But it was very accidental that it landed in horror. So I was just like, oh,
okay.
Interesting.
So. And you used classical tracks, very famous classical tracks, three different ones for each part of the of the film. Do you want to tell us a bit more about that?
I really liked the idea of taking something incredibly familiar. Like, the classical tracks are very familiar. They're like Dance of the Sugar and Plairies and Carmen, and they're very familiar. And they're very middle class, because the film is actually meant to have that kind of middle class, suburban type feel.
Yeah, I'm because bringing, it's two people sort of
a couple that
eating.
Don't, you know, like, you know, it's a very suburban couple doing their day-to-day things, but then there's horror thrown into that. And I think also the classical tracks sort of bring that suburban element, but it's also the fact taking tracks that are very recognised, been used in a lot of things, but not actually horror-esque things, and then actually bringing that horror element. And it's sort of like, through the recognition, it sort of makes things a bit uncomfortable and also quite humorous as well, because it is quite funny seeing someone eat a poo to Dance with the Sugar Plum Fairies. That's quite... entertaining. You don't really expect that, so So it is sort of the, you know, I did just want to take something familiar and then put the horror twist mm-hmm. onto it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I think this is your second horror, mm-hmm. is that right? Second horror short.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what was your first one in the same style?
No, my first one was actually more fantasy. It was sort of more fantasy horror. It was a retelling of three fairy tales. The Little Mermaid, Cinderella and Red Riding Hood, but then bringing horror into that. So going back to the very original stories and then turning that into horror, setting it in a modern environment, keeping that fantasy element, but then bringing horror into it and bringing, like, having the ugly sisters cut off their toes to fit their foot in the glass slipper and sort of building on that, but also having the idea that this violence has actually still got that fairy tale poetic beauty. So that was sort of my first short film.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Okay. And Jennifer, you also have this is your first short film,
yes.
but you've studied M.R. James and horror films, and you've also written a book called The 500 Essential Cult Movies. So you're not entirely new to horror.
No, I've been a student of horror for a long time, so that, you know, definitely has informed my film. And it is a first-time effort, but there's a lot of thought and history gone into it. So I hope it shows.
Mm-hmm. So why did the three of you decide to work in the horror genre? Is it something? Are you horror fans?
I am. I've been into horror films for ages. So just sort of, I went to fine art college, and all my final pieces were all to do with like killing people, or like I had formed an obsession with serial killers and stuff like that as well, and I would just like read all the profiling books, and I don't know, I just love all that stuff for some reason, and it's probably goes with my kind of lifestyle and the way I look, if you know what I mean. So it's like all my tattoos will end up being horror related as well. So, and like I studied horror studies when I was at university to get extra points, and it's just, you know, and I work full time in the film industry, usually as a production designer or art director, or within the art department, and I've mostly worked on horror films. Mm-hmm. And I have worked on other stuff, but I prefer horror films to work on. They're just more fun, and I think I just can relate to what's going on and get more into it, basically. So it's just, I'm just a massive horror fan.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So why do you think there are so few filmmakers working in the horror genre?
Filmmakers or women filmmakers?
Women filmmakers, yes.
Well, there's not many women filmmakers in general anyway. I mean, I am discovering more recently that you know, like I met a woman the other day who's directed some episodes of Hollyoaks, and is it China that you spoke to? She'd done
China Myung.
She'd done some Misfits, I noticed, because I IMDb'd her after I looked at that article that was on there, so just to investigate, because I'm a bit of a cyber stalker with people sometimes. But
you shouldn't have said that on the radio.
No,
they'll
that.
Be doing it to me now. But yeah, and it's just, you know, just in general, there isn't many female, you know, I've worked on over 15 low budget feature films, and I haven't worked for one female director, and I really would like to, because I just would like to see if there is a difference, you know, because I've only ever worked for men, and that's partly why I was like, why are these guys all having fun? We can do it too. And also the confidence, like, it took me a while, and I met the right people, and they gave me that confidence to do it, because I'd always wanted to do it, and it's hard. I think it's hard in general, to be honest.
Yeah,
I think you're exactly right, because first of all, you have the dearth of female directors in mm-hmm. general, but then you have in the horror genre, females are not generally considered a valid audience for horror. So you're not going to want women to direct films that are thought to be primarily directed at men. Mm. And there's that whole story about Catherine Hardwicke not getting the interview for The Fighter because it's a film about men, it's an action film, it has to be directed by a man. Of course, Sex and the City can be directed by a man, but that's, you know, a completely different thing. But yeah, it's just, so in general, it's a small amount, but when you get into these sort of genres, action films and horror films, it tends to be much more, you know, male-oriented, and therefore, obviously, a female can't direct to a male audience, which is bull.
Yes, and also I think it's wrong about this idea that the horror audience is entirely male, because I think there is actually a substantial female audience for horror, which hasn't been quite recognised yet. Yeah. So I don't know why.
I think it's picking up, like we were discussing earlier in the coffee shop, like how in general when you turn on the radio these days, there's a lot more songs that you'll hear that are sung by women, and just we are slowly. You know, we're still like trying to pick up the pieces from the suffragettes, if you know what I mean. Like, going back that far.
Suffragettes of horror.
Yeah. So I like that. So I think we are still trying to sort of make ourselves heard in general. So, and like the horror industry, like, you know, I've been to Fright Fest a couple of years and, you know, I try and go, or I go on like all the horror sites like Shock Theatre Drop, Dread Central, like, you know, there's Fangoria, you know, all that stuff. And I'm always investigating what's going on in general and stuff like that. And, you know, I think girls are just getting more into it, even if, you know, maybe they've got a boyfriend that's into it, and then they go, hey, this stuff's cool, I get into it. You know, you go to conventions, there's a lot more girls there now as well, and they're all sort of into all that stuff, and you can buy toys or horror toys. It's just, I think it's more accessible, so you can get into it more. And it's you know, that you've got like Jennifer's Body that was made, you know, written by was it Diablo Cody, however you say her name, who did Juno and stuff, which I think is a great film for kind of girls. And like we were saying, like Twilight and all that stuff, you know, they are starting to aim.
Do you think there
chicks.
Is a specific type of horror for women? Do you think women like a certain type of horror?
I think women are told that they should like a certain type of horror. I mean, the horror films that I've only recently got into horror because I was traumatised from watching Texas Chainsaw Massacre at 14. So it's only like literally in the past 2 years that I've actually overcome the insomnia and I'm actually able to start watching horror films again and not get nightmares. But I think women are told that there is a certain type of horror that you should like, that, oh, this is female horror. And it's like, for me, actually, the horror I like is, you know, once again, the bloodier the better, and fake prosthetics and all that type of stuff. And I think actually when you start introducing that to women, they end up loving it. But I think there is something, and particularly like for a director in horror, like a female director in horror, there is something a bit scary that you have to put this stamp on you, like, I am the scary lady who does like blood in films, and I am that type of woman. And instantly you're a little bit scary to the industry, because it's like, this isn't a woman doing drama about, you know, some serious issues.
It's
like,
comedy.
Oh, you know, or a romantic comedy. It's like she's actually got a mind like a man, and that all of a sudden becomes a little bit scared, you know, a little bit. Yeah, but yeah, I do think women are told to like a certain thing, and usually there is that little romance, you know, even in things like True Blood, there has to be the little romantic element. But I think actually if you actually went round and spoke to women, I know loads of women who love as bloody a horror as, I keep mentioning blood, this is really bad.
No, this is good. Good, it thing is called bloody women after all.
Yeah, I keep mentioning fine. Blood. But I think actually if you go around and speak to women, actually spoke to the, you know, the average woman, most of them would probably be like, actually I really like this horror film here, and I really like this. But I think it's something that women are told, but not actually necessarily.
I'd say that, like, you know, because you get an adrenaline kick, like when something's a bit scary, like, you know, as women, we get that feeling too. You know, you could sit there and you're both there, like on the edge of the seat, or like be grossed out, like, oh my god, that's disgusting, or what's going, you know, watch Paranormal Activity, watch that, and then be at home on your own with the lights off in your house. Like, honestly, I was so scared.
I was bored. I was just like, where's the blood? Where's the blood? It's not a horror film. There's no blood.
Yeah, it's not. It's kind of, it is slow sort of thing, that sort of film, but it affected me more afterwards when I was on my own. Like, I saw Irreversible, and that rape scene in that is so dark. And I, after I'd seen that, I had to walk under a tunnel to get to a nightclub on my own, because there was like four of us in the cinema and like two people left. And I'm like, there's something wrong with me because I'm in here watching this and everyone's left. You know, and this is disgusting. But it, you know, sometimes it affects you later.
Yeah.
You know? And I don't know, I like being affected by stuff. I like having that little fear. I think, you know, Tom Savini was saying how that bit of fear, that adrenaline junkie sort of thing, it keeps you alive. It keeps, you know, it makes you live longer in a way.
I completely agree with you. I actually prefer the psychological horror because of those exact reasons. They stay with you. I mean, a lot of times if it's a cheap scare, you know, you see something in a mirror or whatever, I jump, but then that's the end of it. But on the other hand, I grew up with Jason and Freddy, you know, so I love the slasher. I mean, they're fun.
They are
fun, you know,
they're
you get the scares and they're hilarious. And I was first in line when Freddy versus Jason came out, and I loved it. So there.
See, I went to go see that as well.
I saw it in the cinema. I was so sad. It was me and a bunch of teenage boys.
And how do you feel? Because obviously this is very, very worthwhile to do something like celebrate International Women's Day and having something like Bird's Eye View. That's very, very necessary. At the same time, it means that you end up being defined by your gender, at least as much as by what you do. How do you feel about that? Is that a problem to you, or do you think it's just a necessary thing to go through?
I think actually, being for this point in life now, you know, I actually think being a woman in horror is probably actually a really good thing at the moment, because instantly you stand out from the thousands of other filmmakers that are out there in the world, and there are thousands, and there are thousands making good films. And if you do have that little edge, like, actually, I'm a woman, I'm in horror, I like blood, you know, like, if you have that edge, I actually think a disadvantage can almost be turned to an advantage if you, you know, because it all of a sudden you become more, you know, there's something interesting there's a different voice there, and like, there are lots of people making films, but a lot of people are making the same films and doing the same thing. So I personally think it's actually, even though it has been to a disadvantage in the past, I think it can now be turned to an advantage.
Okay, all right. Do you all agree?
I agree with that to a point. I mean, I think it's unfortunate that as a woman horror filmmaker, you can't just be a horror filmmaker. You can't be put on the same sort of level as the male horror filmmakers, because, you know, there are so few that it's obviously going to be pointed out. On the other hand, because that's a problem, because there are so few, because women can't, you know, be recognized as horror filmmakers or action filmmakers, or, you know, they're being turned down because of their gender, it's going to have to be brought up. You're going to have to be defined that way. And I think you're right in a sense that you can turn it to advantage. But on the other hand, you can only turn it into an advantage if the film community also sees it as an advantage. And I think that's where we need to do a little bit more work.
But it's sort of going through like a transitional period, I'd say. Like, it's getting there. It's getting there.
It's been getting there.
Swings and roundabouts.
Give me hope. Give me hope. I'd have to keep positive.
I think it doesn't matter. It's like, if you make a good film, you make a good film. Like, it doesn't matter what sex you are. Like, you know, and it's like, I mean, it's great that there is all this stuff going on, and it's, you know, it's good because people are recognising and people are seeing the work that I've done. But for instance, like, getting into Fright Fest for me was like really important, because that's just a festival, you know, it's not for women, it was for everybody, and, you know, it's like the biggest thing in the country, and getting into that was so, it meant so much to me, like, just personally, to be quite honest. And it's like, if, you know, I think if you did manage to get the budget and, you know, someone would help you out and you made a feature film and it was a horror feature film and it was on these horror sites, I don't know if they would really focus that much on the fact within the horror community that you were a woman. I'm not really sure, like, because I kind of read all those things, and I think they were just, you want to be seen more as a person, you know, than at the end of the day. So, you know, it'd be nice if you can get up there with the boys and just, you know, give them one of those.
I'd much rather be known as a horror filmmaker than a female horror filmmaker.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
Yeah. You know? Okay. Okay, we'll have to end it here. So thanks to my guests, Melanie Light, Kate Shenton and Jennifer Ice.
Thank you.
And for more information on Bird's Eye View, please go to www.birds-eye-view.co.uk. And to read our feature on the Darklight Initiative, go to the feature section of www.electricsheepmagazine.com.
The three shorts by directors Melanie Light, Kate Shenton and Jennifer Ice were screened as part of the Horror Shorts programme at the Bird's Eye View Film Festival on Saturday the 12th of March at the ICA in London. For more info about this and related articles about women in horror films, please visit our website www.electricsheepmagazine.com. Thanks for listening.